What will normal look like when we finally get back to normal after the COVID-19 pandemic has slowed? It probably won't look like the normal we had before. Washington Post economics correspondent and former Patriot News deputy editor Heather Long recently wrote about the period after Americans returned to work and businesses slowly reopen. It's just one of the topics, economic in nature, that we'd like to cover with Heather Long today. Heather, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's good to be back.
That's right. You were on our program very early on when we were still talking about, coming out of the Great Recession, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, who could have foreseen that we would have been in a situation that looks like a Great Depression, at least on the jobs front right now?
No, it does.
And you're right. I mean, as we start to think about what do the next few months look like? Obviously, there's no roadmap for this. Nobody has a crystal ball. But I think we can learn a lot from some of these businesses, these essential businesses that are open right now. And I've been paying close attention to places like the Port of Los Angeles, which is one of the biggest hubs in the North America for goods coming from China. Everything from masks, toilet paper, to other products we buy comes through there, and also companies like Boeing is just restarting manufacturing. So, as I was talking to some workers out in the Port of Los Angeles, this is what they're telling me is the situation for them, and I think it's going to be indicative for what we see across the nation in the coming months. First of all, not everybody goes back to work. You know, even though ships started returning this month after almost like a ghost town in March of no ships coming from Asia, you know, the ships are back, but not as many as before. You know, there aren't as many much demand for goods. So there's fewer ships, there's fewer workers, they wear masks, they literally close the entire port for an hour between the morning shift and the evening shift now, something they didn't do before, to do a deep clean. They have workers arrive at staggered times. And my favorite example, which I certainly hadn't thought about, this one driver was telling me, my first day back, a couple of my fellow colleagues tried to throw a pizza party in the break room, and that had to be broken up, and the managers had to come in and remove the chairs to dissuade people from hanging out in the break room. You know, something that used to seem so normal is now a real risk that has to be contained.
You know, the big question, Heather, that many people will have with that is, how long does that last, or do we know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I call it the limbo economy or the zombie economy. I sort of think in my head, you know, how long can these restaurants operate at 50% capacity? You know, this idea that every other table could be filled. And I think we just don't know. I'm starting to see notes. There was one from CNN that went out to employees yesterday that said that most of those employees for CNN are not expected to come back to the office until September. And even my eyebrows went up like, whoa, I was thinking July, August in my head. But, you know, here's a major company saying not until September. And even when September hits, you know, they might have these staggered, you know, some people come to work on Monday, some people come to work on Tuesday, you know, so it's not such a pileup in the office. Realistically, there's going to be some form, I think, of these limbo economy situation, probably until we have a vaccine. And I had been writing, that's probably in 12 months, and several doctors and epidemiologists wrote into me this week to say, look, you're being way too optimistic on 12 months. Probably going to be more like 18 months or longer before we can really get a vaccine or an antibody test widely distributed.
Wow. You know, one of the things I think about, though, is that it's been a month or so since that 12 to 18 month goal or target is out there. So, you know, under normal circumstances, many people would look at it and say, oh, that's one less month. So now we're only 11 or 17 months away. Guess it's not going to work that way, huh?
Well, maybe you're right. Yeah, maybe that's a little bit of optimism. That's that we
optimism,
need right
now. Yeah. let me just tell our listeners, if you have a question or a comment for Heather Long of the Washington Post, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Heather, I just want to take a step back because you're in a position as a national economics columnist, correspondent, to see the big picture. Since you talk with so many people across the country, how bad is it right now?
Look, we learned this week that we have 26 million Americans without jobs, and that, you know, we haven't seen those numbers in our lifetimes. You know, we haven't seen those numbers since the 1930s Great Depression era. So, you know, this is real. This pain is real. And Pennsylvania, I should note, is one of the harder hit states so far. It's basically, you know, it's almost roughly 20% of workers in the state have applied for unemployment. Now, some may be furloughed, so at least they still keep health insurance. But this is still, you know, no income suddenly coming in. And for a lot of people, this is no income coming in for a month now. And, you know, I think the Congress tried to do the right thing by increasing the unemployment benefits and sending out these, quote, stimulus checks of $1,200 per person to people who are in the middle class or, you know, earning $75,000 or less. But the problem is a lot of that money hasn't reached people yet. And so I think there's real hardship. There's real pain. I've been on the phone talking to people who I literally want to get off the phone and send them some money. You know, they're good, honest people, work hard, and they lost their job. They worked in a restaurant as a server, or they're a cook, or one of these types of jobs. You know, obviously that ended in mid-March. And they've tried to apply for unemployment. They're waiting for the stimulus check, and no money has come to them yet. You know, they haven't been able to pay rent. They're borrowing money from family to pay groceries. We all see these photos and evidence of these, quote, bread lines in our country. I was sharing one in central PA. I talked to a pastor at a church in Cleona, Pennsylvania, and he said to me last Friday, so a week ago, a farmer in their community had extra eggs, a lot of extra eggs. It was 2,700 eggs, and he wanted to donate them to the church to hand out to people in need. And the pastor said, okay, you know, we don't normally hand out eggs, but we'll try to make this work. You know, they posted on Facebook. The pastor thought that it would take a couple of days. You know, that's a lot of eggs, 2,700 eggs. He told me they were gone in 28 minutes. That's how many people of the parking lot full of people waiting for these eggs, most of whom had lost their jobs. So, you know, that image just sticks in my mind. 2,700 eggs gone in 28 minutes, even in Cleona, PA.
You've written recently in the last week or so about some of the actions that the Congress has taken, talking about the stimulus checks and some of the holdups for people. You know, one of the things that I don't know if it would surprise people, but maybe they should know, is that one of the things that has held up getting money to people that maybe desperately need it is the technology that the government has. That we probably, a lot of people are probably taking for granted that the government has cutting edge technology. They can get these checks rolled out, boom, boom, boom. But that's not the case, is it?
Yeah, the line I've been using is you get what you don't pay for, you know? I mean, we always say you get what you pay for. Well, in this case, there's been years of underinvestment in the technology for that run these systems. And really, I mean, let's be honest, a year ago, unemployment was very low. Even 6 months ago, unemployment was very low. And so, you know, a lot of state governments didn't have big unemployment offices because you didn't think you needed it. So they're underfunded, they're understaffed, and suddenly this really horrible situation hit. I will say, you know, I got to give some credit to Pennsylvania. I talked to workers across the country, and I have to say some of the people who've gotten their unemployment benefits fastest that I've spoken with were in Pennsylvania. The poster child for horrible, horrible on this has been Florida. They have about 1.7 million applicants. You can imagine the Disney's been hard hit, the entertainment travel industry really hard hit by all this. So 1.7 million have tried to apply in that state, and only 7% of them, fewer than 120,000 people, have received any money so far. So they are hands down the worst in the nation. And I like to call it, you know, we always have this discussion across America that we don't invest enough in infrastructure. And we often meet there thinking about bridges and roads, you know, that are that clearly need to be updated, and we haven't done it. Well, the same is true for our government technology in many cases. And that's why we see these delays in the unemployment checks getting out. And that's why the IRS, you know, they're still using this COBOL coding language from sort of the 60s and 70s. And that's why they're also struggling, you know, to have that system to get those $1,200 payments direct deposited to people across the nation.
COBOL, you know, there's a word I haven't heard in a long, long time. So I guess that's a good indication of how old some of this technology is. A column that you've recently written had to do with our recovery being a W-shaped rather than a V-shaped that many people are counting on. Explain that, if you will.
Yeah. So the President Trump and a lot of his advisors talk about the V-shaped recovery. And I'll admit, in early March, I thought that might be possible too. The idea was we were going to have, you know, maybe be closed for 2 or 3 weeks. It was going to be this really deep downturn of shutting the country down quickly. And then, you know, things would lift maybe by April 1st or Easter, we were all thinking, you know, initially, that, and we would come roaring back, people would go back out and start spending again, and life would resume. And so that was this idea of the V. It would be a sharp dip and then a sharp rebound for the economy. Obviously, this is going on for a lot longer in terms of having businesses shut down. And so you run two risks here, I think, of having another drop, another downturn later in the year or even early next year. One of those is the health risk, and Dr. Fauci, Dr. Bricks, others of these national experts speak about this a lot, that if you reopen the economy too soon, you risk having a second wave of second spike of coronavirus cases and deaths. And if that happens, we would have to shut down businesses again. And really, the big impact on the economy would be people would be even more scared to venture out. I know, as much as I need a haircut personally, I'm a little nervous. Like, even if where I live in D.C., even if the mayor of Washington, D.C. suddenly says, hey, it's okay to get a haircut again, yeah, I might be a little nervous to rush back out and do that right away, you know, or ride the metro again or go back to my office right away. And so if we have the second wave of cases, that's going to make people even more hesitant to return and spend. The second thing I don't think gets enough attention is I'm really worried about a second wave of bankruptcies and defaults of both companies and individuals later this year. And the reason I say that is this. As bad as 26 million people out of work right now is, the number that terrifies me is that economists now estimate that in December, so when the holidays hit, New Year's Eve, we will still have 15 million people unemployed. So that's that notion that we get some people back to work as things reopen. But, you know, if you still have 15 million people unemployed by the end of the year, you know, most people have a little savings. They get a couple of these unemployment checks. You know, that tides them over. But that can't last through that many months. That's when you start to see people losing their businesses, losing their homes, losing their cars. And that could also make this W effect of, you know, we sort of recover briefly some point this summer, and then it could easily go downhill again if we have the second wave of people losing jobs and businesses.
You mentioned in one of the columns that the SARS outbreak and the Spanish flu in 1918 actually had three peaks, right?
Yeah, that's right. I have to say we're all learning our history there. I wish I'd paid more attention to my high school history class when they taught that. But somebody had written in to remind me of that, and I put it in the article. And it, you know, it's a good, I think it just helps us realize this debate of how do we weigh, you know, we all want to reopen some businesses. We all want to, anxious to get out again. But we know from both history and we know the risk factors, if we do it too soon, do we cause, do we trigger that spike again in cases that's only going to make this situation more prolonged?
Heather, we're getting a number of emails that are asking you to make some forecasts, and I don't know whether you're in a position to do this or not, but I'll give these to you anyway and see what you say. Anthony asks, in your opinion, do you think it's practical that Pennsylvania opens back up on May 8th? I don't know whether you're aware or not, but Governor Wolf here in Pennsylvania has said that May 8th, now this isn't a total opening of the state. It was going to be by region, and it will be done in levels. But the question Anthony is asking is one that I'm sure a lot of people have, is 2.5 weeks from now, 2 weeks from now, is that enough time?
Well, I wish I knew. I will say, looking at this from a national perspective, Pennsylvania has certainly been one of the more conservative states in terms of doing very aggressive lockdown and shutdown type situations. So, my hunch would be Pennsylvania is not going to be like Georgia. You know, Georgia is starting to open even gyms and hair salons today and this weekend. I don't sense that Pennsylvania is going to be that quick out of the gate. I think it's going to be a much slower process than PA. Just there seems to be a lot more caution from the leaders in Pennsylvania.
We had another question from Blake, actually from Dallas, Texas. I'm assuming traveling through the area, wanted to know about higher education. Would there be a face-to-face higher education this fall?
Well, I mean, a lot of universities are already starting to cancel for the fall, telling people they will not be back on campus. Honestly, I think the bet for colleges is probably that the fall semester for most places would continue to be online. It seems like a lot of universities are kind of planning that way. I'm in touch with my own college in Massachusetts, and I used to sit on the board of a college in Pennsylvania, and just talking to those administrators I know, they are certainly thinking that way and planning for a fall semester that isn't in person.
Mm. The reason I, ask those questions is because there are so many people asking, they're dying to get outside, that's for sure, or get back to some normalcy. But at the same time, you're just looking for someone to say, here's some good information, here's some accurate information, but we don't know. And that goes back to your columns. What you've written is that this new normal will be one that is not like the old normal, at least initially, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. One of my colleagues actually wrote another piece about what this new normal might look like. And I've thought through it a lot, but something that really struck me is she was writing that we might have to remove all the tchotchkes and the photos from our desk. Like, I don't know, even just the way we organize our space, trying to keep things as clean and sterile as possible. And anybody who knows me knows I'm usually one of those people with like files and knickknacks packed high on my desk. And something about that image of having, even if we do go back, having to just strip my desk of everything that's on it. Really, that hit me as like, whoa, I can't even have my photos of my family, around my desk anymore. So, I think the biggest worry for me is we're starting to see small businesses go bankrupt, and our people just decide they don't want to reopen again, even if they can get a loan. It's too uncertain. And that's what worries me, because this uncertainty just hangs over us. Even if the governor of Pennsylvania says, hey, let's reopen May 8th, are the restaurants going to be full enough for weeks or months in order to make business sustainable? I think that's the real question on my mind.
I know I'm jumping around on you here, but oil prices, we've heard a lot about oil right at the very beginning when the pandemic struck here in the United States. It was at the same time that Russia and some of the other oil-producing countries were having trouble getting together, Saudi Arabia, with what their production was going to be like. So prices started to drop since then. So there are so few drivers on the road. There's not the demand for gasoline, for oil. Prices were in the negative territory earlier this week. Why is that important? I mean, many people look at that on the surface and say, oh, okay, gas prices are going to go way down. But why is that important economically?
Well, the United States has, I mean, look at Pennsylvania, has become a major player in the energy sector, you know, a major producer again, one of the world's top producers of oil. And so even though cheap gas is really helpful to consumers and saves people money when you're going about your weekly tasks, this costs jobs. We've already seen it. There's been mass layoffs. They've impacted some in Pennsylvania in the energy sector. Obviously, Texas, West Virginia, you know, Oklahoma, a lot of these states have been hard hit by this. So, you know, it's both a positive and a negative for the United States to see oil this low. And the number that I keep in my head right now, the price of a barrel of oil is in the teens. You know, you can, there's like pizzas that are more expensive than a barrel of oil right now, which is just crazy to think about. And when the oil is this low, if it stays below $20 like this, within a year, the expectation is that hundreds of American energy companies will go bankrupt. So, you know, there's some real ramifications to energy prices this low, this long.
President Trump seems to put a big emphasis on the stock market. And since this started, the Dow Jones Industrial, which I'm told is not a good barometer, but many people use it because of it's a number that's easy to understand, but down about 5,000 points, 6,000 points since this began. Many people look at that and say, my 401k, my retirement is being savaged by this. So, is there any reason for optimism that that's going to come back anytime soon?
Well, I will say on the stock market, I actually, before I became a journalist, worked in the investment field. And, you know, one of the most telling books in my career that I read in investments is actually a book called Triumph of the Optimist. And generally speaking, whatever country in the world you look at, if you look at over time, the markets do come back. And even in the United States, the example I always like to give is the Great Depression. So if you invested just before the stock market crash, like the night before the stock market crash of 1929, you know, the stock market had regained all of those losses, which were just historic. You know, it took just over a decade. So that was a long time. That was a lost decade, it probably felt like, to those people. But it ultimately came roaring back, and that was the worst period. You know, you think about the Great Recession, again, another really bad drawdown in the stock market, worse than what we've seen in recent weeks. You know, that, again, it took about 2 to 3 years to get back, but we got back, and then we had one of the longest, you know, roaring periods of stocks in history. So I would say keep optimistic for the long term.
Heather Long is the economics correspondent for The Washington Post, formerly deputy editor of The Patriot News. Heather, we'll have to talk again.
Hey, thanks again.
Thank you. Coming up on Monday's show, we talk with the Susquehanna University biology professor, myths about COVID-19.